This is our last class, and I want to once again thank Lorraine for asking about having this when she did, and looking forward to any types of classes. Please, you guys figure out what you want, figure out a time and day, let me know. I'm happy to make it happen. Okay, it's just when I've in the past picked times and days, it didn't happen. So that's why I would appreciate. And I hope we would all appreciate if we can make more of these things happen, because it is so successful when people come and hopefully get something out of it. Okay, so the first week we talked about the structure of the Haggadah, and last week we talked primarily about Magid, and today we're going to look at the very end of the Haggadah. The very end of the Haggadah, most specifically, everything which follows a benching. Okay, so if we remember the order of the Haggadah, so we get to Shulchan Orech, Tzafun Barech, and then we have Hallel and Yirtza. So Barech is benching. Now, every meal that we have, Shabbos, Yom Tov, the last thing at the meal is benching, right? We do Birkat HaMazon, and then we're done. We go on our way. Sometimes people like to have a little dessert afterwards. Right? Maybe they say, okay, we'll bench so that you're not held hostage, and then you can leave whenever you like. But here's some tea, here's some cake, whatever. Now, we don't do that on Pesach, or at the Seder, rather, because at the Seder, we are limited by nature of what the Seder is. That the last thing which we're going to be eating is the Afikomen, and then after the Afikomen, that which is your dessert, that's it, then the only thing which we have afterwards are the last two cups of wine. The third cup of wine being after Barech, after benching, and then we have the final items of the Seder, namely Hallel and Nirtza. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. We're going to be looking at Hallel and Nirtza, just to A, understand what their role in the Haggadah is, and B, to go into a little bit of depth in the passages of Nirtza, in particular, simply because they are the most, other than the fact that we're familiar with them from the Seder, but they're the most foreign, I should say, from our typical experience on a number of different levels. Okay, so if you have the Maxwell House, which I have here, I'll tell you which page it's on. We're on page 30, 34, 35, 36. 34 is where benching ends, and then we have Shvocha Maschal Agoyim, and then Hallel begins. Okay, so we'll start with Shvocha Maschal Agoyim. If you have the public Sagara, what page is it on?
39.
Okay, good. 39, smack in the middle of the page. You'll see the Bracha Borei Pri Hagafen, and after the Bracha Borei Pri Hagafen, you have this paragraph of Shvocha Maschal Agoyim. Okay, so one of the things which we need to recognize and, of course, understand is that the Haggadah, as we saw a few weeks ago, was compiled over a course of time, and so some of the things which were included in it were a response to the particular issues that people were facing. So when we, for example, look at that the opening passage of the Haggadah, meaning in Magid, of Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya is written in what language? Is it Hebrew? No, it's in Aramaic. Well, where is Aramaic from? Now, we know that Aramaic was spoken in the land of Israel, but it wasn't just a language from that area. It was a language of that era. And so it's a language of Galus. I think about Galus means of exile. What language is the Babylonian Talmud written in? Aramaic, okay, Aramaic, the Babylonian Talmud, as opposed to the Jerusalem Talmud, which is primarily written in Hebrew, because that was a language of the time, but it's a language of exile. When we think about Aramaic, it's a language of exile. So Halach Ma'anya, which is the opening of Magid, is an indicator that until such time that we are completely redeemed, and the redemption means with the coming of Mashiach, with the coming of the Messiah, and the coming of the Messiah has a number of different components intertwined into whatever it means, we are not yet redeemed. So that's the first thing which we say. Even if you're in Israel, even if you're in the old city, even if you're overlooking the Temple Mount, you still say Halach Ma'anya. Why? Because there's a building there that is not the Beit HaMikdash, not the temple that's supposed to be. Over the course of history, we had the Jewish people until relatively recently, and we're all familiar with the events of 70 years ago. But until relatively recently, the Jewish people, and as we know, just look at a newspaper today, it's not getting better, unfortunately. We would have liked to have thought that the world would have gotten over, said, all right, we did what we did, you know, in the in World War II, and now we can just say, we'll just let old hatreds die, and we can move on because we're enlightened. Well, the world can't help itself. So in the history of the world, the Jews are living in places where it's just, sometimes it's miserable. Sometimes it's miserable, and so what happens on Pesach is we experience a night, one night of the year, or two nights of the year, two Sidarim, where we feel like we are the freest of people. Right, and that's again what we say in Halach Ma'anya. Hashata Avdei L'shana Babar Yisrael, Hashata Avdei L'shana Babnei Chorin. Right, that right now, you know, we are slaves, but we're going to be free. But at the end of the Haggadah, the whole point of the end of the Haggadah is that we're re-experiencing redemption. We talk about the splitting of the sea, we talk about the Exodus, the splitting of the sea, and we talk about getting to Sinai, we talk about getting to the land of Israel. These are some of the themes which come out towards the end of the Haggadah. It's not so much in the story of that we see in Maggid, although the Song of Dayenu does contain hints of those other elements, the post, you know, immediate Exodus days, where it says, you know, Ilu Hechnisenu L'Eretz Yisrael V'lo Ban Alon Beis Bechira, had God only taken us into the land of Israel and not had us build a Beis HaMikdash, Dayenu would have been enough. Okay, right, that would have been pretty nice. That is what we have today. Thank God. Dayenu, it's enough, what? It's enough to give thanks. It's enough to be thankful and grateful for. And I think that we're all grateful for the existence of the State of Israel, because it is a tremendous blessing that our ancestors yearned for, pined for, wanted, and many did not get to see over almost 2,000 years. And we live in a time when we're able to see it and go there and experience it. But that's what Shvoch HaMaschal LaGoyim is, right? Shvoch HaMaschal LaGoyim means that you should pour out your wrath to the nations Asher Lo Yudeucha, that did not know you, Amam Lachos Asher B'Shimcha Lo Karau, and on the kingdoms that did not call out your name. And then we quote a few verses, one from Tehillim, and one from Echa. Ki achal, the first one, Ki achal es Yaakov es Neveu Shamu. They have devoured Jacob, and laid waste his habitation. Shvach aliyam samecha v'choron abchayisigein. It's also from Tehillim, the first one, Tehillim 79. The second one from Tehillim 69, pour out your indignation upon them, let the wrath of your anger overtake them, and their tedope afasash midei mitach hashmei Hashem, pursue them with anger and destroy them from beneath the heavens of the Lord. That is a theme of what the Jewish people were responding to, just in seeing people who could not accept them for who they were, could not accept that we think differently, we believe differently, we live a little differently, and that's okay. It's okay, we're not a threat to you. You can live your way, we live our way, and that's the way the world should be. Right? Thank God for the United States of America, who figured that out in the late 1700s and said, hey, you know what? People can live together even if they think differently, even if they believe differently. And that is something which some nations picked up, you know, in due time. Some still preach, although don't necessarily practice. But that can you imagine? It took so long for people to figure out that, hey, different religions can live in the same land and they don't have to kill each other. Unbelievable. But the history of the Jewish people is that this is what we were dealing with. And so the Jewish people said, look, on tonight, when we look at it as Alel Shimurim, God is watching over us. So, Shvoch HaMaschal LaGoyim. And I want to just put a small qualification. You know, we can talk about Alel Shimurim and it's God watching over. But the fact of the matter is, as we all know, you remember that story in that hotel in Israel a number of years ago, the night of the Seder. So what does it mean? How God's watching over. How could somebody go in there and explode something? And the answer is, that's not how God works. Leil Shimurim doesn't mean that any person who wants to commit a terrorist act, a person, an individual who has free will, will be, their hand will be stayed. That's not what Leil Shimurim means. Leil Shimurim means it's a night of watch. But guess what? Even with the best watchman, things can happen. So we don't look at things in that perspective, especially since if we do look at things from that perspective, then God gets thrown out the window at any turn. It's so easy to say, oh, I have a question, and therefore I get rid of God. And some people do that. Some people do that. I remember one of my favorite lines from Rav Amital, Zichrono Lebracha, he was the founding Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshivat Har Etzion, who went through World War II, was in a number of labor camps, And later on, when he was in Israel, he bumped into somebody who he knew from before the war, who was no longer religious, and the fellow saw that Rav Amital had become a rabbi, and that he was, you know, living a life as a religious Jew. And he said to Rav Amital, he said, after the war, how could you still believe in God? And his response was, and if I didn't believe in God, would I be any better off? Okay, something to think about. So this is our, it's a tefillah saying, look, we are looking forward, we don't want to do the, not that we don't want to do the Seder anymore, but what do we talk about in the Seder? We talk about a geula, we talk about a future, we talk about a redemption, we talk about when things are the way that they should be. Okay, the Seder means that you have your Karban Pesach, you have your meat from the roasted lamb, you sit down, you tell a story, and you don't have to think about what they did to us, because all we could do is focus on what's our theme for the evening. We talked about this last week. God, not Moshe, not anything else. The theme for the evening is God. Okay, so who are we talking to? Shvoch HaMascha, we're talking to God. Yeah, we open the door, we might sing a song about Eliyahu HaNavi. But what's the song about Eliyahu HaNavi? What's the point? We're saying that when will the Jews finally triumph for good? And again, triumph doesn't mean that we need all the nations of the world to be on their knees and saying uncle. It means that they're leaving us alone. And they're not bothering with us. We do our thing. They do their thing. Right? You think about what is said in Divrei Hayamim. God tells King David, you're going to have a son, and Shlomo Yeshemo, his name is going to be Shlomo. Ki Shalom v'Sheket Etein al Yisrael b'yamav, because there'll be peace and tranquility and quiet in the land of Israel during his time as king, during his reign. That's all that we want. Shalom v'Sheket, peace and quiet. Right, you had nations coming and giving homage to Shlomo. You're such an amazing king. And he would give gifts to him, and he would give gifts to them. That's it. You leave us alone. We leave you alone. We're happy to be peaceful with you. That's all that we need. That's all that we want. And that's why Shlomo was able to build a Beis HaMikdash, because it was Shalom v'Sheket, peace and quiet, peace and tranquility. And that's what we need. We need God. And we're not asking God, Shvoch HaMascha L'Goyim, let your anger go against them, that you wipe them out. Let it be that you switch off that Jew hate switch, which they have in their mind, which they can't get over, and say, enough's enough. Just be and leave my children alone. And that's what Shvoch HaMascha L'Goyim, and that's why Eliyahu HaNavi, because Eliyahu HaNavi is supposed to represent Mashiach, and Eliyahu HaNavi is representing Mashiach, is what we ask for. I just came from a bris. And one of the things, it's a great bris speech this time of year, because we have a chair designated for Eliyahu, just like at the Seder, we have a cup designated for Eliyahu, and we open the door for Eliyahu, because that's what we're thinking about. We're thinking about what Eliyahu represented, the covenant, the Jewish people, being a steadfast defender of God, being a steadfast defender of the Jewish people. So that's Eliyahu's role at the bris, and that's Eliyahu's role at the Seder. Somebody who is representing what we're looking forward to, like we just read in the Haftorah this week, Hine Anochi Shalech Lachem, behold, I'm sending to you, as Eliyahu HaNavi, Lifnei Ba Yom HaShem HaGadol V'Anorah. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come before that great day, that amazing Gadol V'Anorah day, that amazing and powerful and awesome day. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come first. So when we open the door and say, Eliyahu HaNavi, welcome, we're essentially saying, we're waiting for you. We're waiting for you. That's what Shvoch HaMascha is about. Okay, last week, we saw how at the end of Magid, there are two paragraphs. At the very end of Magid, before the last and final bracha, well, there's two brachas, one bracha and then the Borei Pri HaGafen bracha. But before those two brachas, we have two paragraphs from Hallel. Okay, now, you should know that in Tehillim, there are two sections in Tehillim which are referred to as Hallel. One is called Hallel HaGadol, and one is called Hallel Mitzrayim. Hallel Mitzrayim, the Egyptian Hallel, okay, is the one that we're actually more familiar with. Because when we daven on Rosh Chodesh, when we daven on a holiday, and we say Hallel, the Hallel that we're saying is the Hallel of Egypt. And you know this because one of the first phrases, especially if it's sung by most people who sing Hallel, they don't usually sing the first paragraph, they sing the second paragraph. B'tzeis Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, right? Or however the tune is. When Israel left Egypt, and that's why it's called Hallel Mitzrayim. And in that paragraph, and if you want, you can actually go back. And I do have the page. Okay, you can go back to the very end of Magid in the public Haggadah. It's going to be on the bottom of page 27. in the Maxwell House Haggadah. It's on, God, I feel like I'm announcing pages in shul. What's going on here? Okay, it's on page 24, second to last paragraph. It's the last paragraph in the public's one. So you have it. So listen, when Israel went out of Egypt, the house of Yaakov, from a people of a foreign language, Yehuda became its holy one, Israel's dominion. The sea saw and fled. The Jordan turned backwards. The mountains skipped like rams, the hills like young sheep. What does that mean? They skip like rams and like young sheep. They're dancing. Harim Ragadu, right? Shlomo Kabach had a song. Harim Ragadu, Ragadu Chiyelim. And it's a very joyous kind of song. What is with the OC that you flee, Jordan that you turn backwards? They're running away because they need to make room for the Jewish people to pass through. Mountains, why do you skip like rams? Hills like young sheep? We do so before the master, the creator of the earth, before the God of Yaakov returns the rock into a pool of water, the flint stone into a spring of water. Those are images which we have from the story of the Jewish people in the Exodus. Right? What does it mean to go into the wilderness without water? The answer is you have a lot of trust in God that he's going to provide water for you. And so some of those miracles are hinted to in that passage. And of course, after that, it continues with Lo Lanu, and this is the Hallel which we're familiar with. Now, Hallel HaGadol, the great Hallel, which is a euphemism, because it's one, depending on whose opinion you follow, it's either one or two paragraphs, but Hallel HaGadol is given to us in this section as well, immediately following, and that is the section which we also say in Shabbos morning davening, in Yom Tov davening, Hodu LaShem Ki Tov, Ki Li Olam Chasdo. Okay, that paragraph that where every sentence ends with Kili Olam Chasdo. So if you turn a page or two, you should come across it. I went back to Hallel. Where is it? So again, in the Maxwell House, it's page 40. In the public, Sagada, it's probably also page 40. Okay, I'm sorry that I'm jumping around a little bit. It's 40, 43, 44, 45, 46. It covers both pages. So that's the Hallel Gadol. So what are we doing? What are we doing with the Hallel at the Seder? Well, the reason why we ended Magid with Hallel is because we're trying to imitate the experience of the Jewish people at that time. What does Exodus do? Exodus makes you free, but Exodus isn't complete until a song is sung. That is the experience, and we see this in the Tanakh, in the Bible, in a number of different places, where there's a salvation, and after the salvation, there is Hallel, there is Shira, song, praise, thanks. We see it after the splitting of the sea, most famously. We see it at the Haftorah. We read that Shabbos, which is the story of Devorah. Remember the battle with Barak ben Abinoam against Sisera, which concludes with the song of Devorah. It's from the book of Judges, Shoftim, chapters 4 and 5. You have a very long song, which becomes a very long Haftorah in Shul, but it's a song. King David sings a song at the end of the second book of Shmuel. And there was, I think it was Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who was supposed to become Mashiach, the Gemara tells us. He was supposed to become Mashiach. And why did he not become Mashiach? Because after his salvation that he experienced, guess what he forgot to do? Sing a song. He forgot to sing Shira. And that is why it is so significant and so important to recognize when we experience his salvation, when we experience an amazing event, and to sing Shira as a result. So what's the point of the Passover evening? The point of the Seder is to be, in whatever way that we can, re-experiencing Exodus. Okay, how do you do that? How do you re-experience Exodus? Well, that's why we're telling the story. Telling the story works best when you identify with the story which you're telling. So that's why the Haggadah tries to give us a lot of instruction. Tell over the story. Ask questions. Have conversations. Have communication, generation to generation. Pretend. What was your experience like? Oh, what did you do today? What was your experience like? Oh, were you beaten? Oh, I mean, again, we're role-playing. That's what the Seder is about. But after we finish the role and we've been able to have a meal fit for a king, then what do? We say, now it's time to sing Shira. The last thing which we ate was the matzah, the afikoman, and the afikoman for us today is supposed to represent the Karban Pesach. It says if we're eating that roasted lamb, which was a sign of redemption. How is it a sign of redemption? Because here you are in Egypt, and you're taking a god of the Egyptians, you're slaughtering it in front of their eyes, you're roasting it in front of their faces, and they can't touch you. That means you've won. That means you're ready for redemption. That means you can be redeemed. Because you've had your Pesach, and now that it's over, you can be redeemed. It's one of the thoughts I shared on Shabbos from Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that until you finish your Pesach, you're not worthy of being redeemed, not worthy of getting out of Egypt, not because you're bad people, not because you've done something wrong, but because you haven't finished the job. Once you finish the job, once you've eaten the afikomen, then you're ready to be redeemed, and then you have to sing Shira. So that's what we do. That's what Hallel is. Hallel of Egypt, Hallel Hagadol, the great Hallel. And we finish it with the end of the Pesukei Dezimra of Shacharis on Shabbos and Yom Tov, which is Nishmas through Yishtabach. Okay, Nishmas Kolchai Tivarech. Page 400. Okay, that's in the Siddur. It's an announcement I usually make on Shabbos. For those who are here, I'm sure you've heard it before if you come early enough. But why do we have Nishmas here? You know, some people might. Right. Maybe it's because, remember the rabbis in Bnei Brak where their students came along and said to them, Rabbis, it's time to say Shema of the morning. So maybe they're the ones who threw this in here. They said, well, if we're going to say Shema, of course we've got to finish Pesukei Dezimra before we get into Shacharis. No, that was a joke. But the idea is that why are we saying Nishmas? Because look at the words. Nishmas kol chai tivarech es shimcha. The soul of every living creature is going to bless your name. God, the ruach kol basar, and the spirit of every flesh also is a reference to every living creature, is tifa'er, usromein, zichacham alkeinu tamidu yalom yadolam. It's just going to exalt you. I mean, that's what we're here for. We don't have to go through the entire passage, but for you know we say in the middle ilu finu malei shira kayam, where our lips only filled with song. Like the sea, and our tongues had rina kamon galav, like it's rolling waves. As if sosenu shevach, afinu means our mouths, and sosenu means our lips. If we could only sing the praise like the expanse of the sky, and our eyes can only light like the sun and like the moon, and if our hands can only spread like the however you define nishrei, some say it's eagles, it's vulture. But we just can spread, and if our feet were swift like the hind, then we still couldn't praise you. We couldn't do it enough. Okay, so in other words, in the same moment that we're saying that we're singing Shira, we're acknowledging that we're inadequate, that we couldn't do it enough. There's no way; it's impossible. And that's our way of saying. That's how I remember one time I was at a Lahavdil. I remember when my great uncle passed away many years ago. I was a kid, so I remember seeing my great aunt. She's distraught, obviously, and I remember walking with my mother over to her and turning to my mother and saying, "I don't even know what to say." And the answer is, "That's what you say. You don't know what to say because you can't come up with the right words." And so, that's on the opposite spectrum. We're saying, "God, we want to praise you, but there aren't enough words." So we're doing our best by saying some of the words, which we have. Thank God we had wise people, King David, whoever wrote the chapters of Tehillim that make Hallel. So we're going to do that, but at the same time we're acknowledging that we are inadequate in our ability to give praise. So we're doing our best, we're using somebody else's words, and that's supposed to carry us to the end. And what else do we say here? That the whole all we want is we want everyone to recognize and to give thanks and to appreciate and to just exalt you in every kind of way, because we know all of my bones, everything about me is going to say, God, who is like you, all the strength, all the power, all the amazing chesed that you do for the world. We have to remember, and this goes back to a point made a little earlier, that as much as people may experience pain in life, as much as people may experience difficulties in life, we have to remember in between those how much joy and how much simcha and how much pleasure we do get out of life. And sometimes in the heat of pain, we forget, but this is what we're saying, that it all comes from God. And nobody ever said that life is going to be perfect. I mean, just look at the first two human beings who existed on the planet according to the Torah, or at least whose stories we have. Adam and Chava, okay, was their life perfect? their life was a little messed up just from the very beginning. Okay, they did something wrong, and then the kids get into a fight, and one of them kills the other. I mean, that is far less than perfect. So if they had it not so easy, if they had it not so great, well, that's a blueprint for what humanity is going to be. So it's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. But we need to appreciate the good, because as much as we blame God for the bad, we also have to blame God for the good. And that's part of what it comes, or that's part of what comes with taking the whole package. Okay, and so that's all of this is, and it's also a reminder, by the way. We say this on Shabbos morning, or on Yom Tov morning, because we need that reminder. And so we bring it on Pesach, maybe at both Shabbos morning and Yom Tov morning and Pesach. It's a time, as opposed to during the week, where people who daven, especially in shul, sometimes it's a little fast. But Shabbos, Yom Tov is supposed to be a time when we take things a little slower, because we're not in a rush to go somewhere. And certainly at the Seder, I mean, the only place people might be in a rush to go to is sleep. But if you're up, say the Shira, take time, pay attention to what we're saying. That's our goal. Now, once we've achieved that, we've said our Hallel, we should be done, right? Because we did what we're supposed to do. We thank you. We thank God for the ability to redeem us once again, and for us to re-experience that which took place. So we have our fourth cup. One second, let me just finish the thought. We have our fourth cup, and we even make a bracha acharona. So even though we benched already, we acknowledge that we recognize we've had two cups of wine since then, and we need to make an after blessing after that second cup of wine. And so we do that. So should we be done? Should we be done?
Yes.
Yes, we should be done. Thank you, Gayla. Exactly. We should be done. We should be done. And yet, we're not done. Yes, Michelle.
This is a naive question.
No.
Are you referring to Hallel?
Yeah, Shira means song. Right. So, no, it's a good question. The question was, is Shira equal Hallel? And the answer is it doesn't. I mean, Hallel is a form of Shira, but Shira can take on different qualities. It depends. So, when I say it, I'm referring to this Hallel, but for example, the song at the sea, the passage in the Siddur, which is Az Yashir, is considered to be Shira. Okay, it's not considered to be Hallel. All right, there. So it's never a bad question. Okay, and you are correct. I'm using the words interchangeably, but they are a little different. They are a little different. One, I actually gave a sermon about it last year, and that's why I write down my sermons, because I forget. But one is. Specifically a thanks, and one is more of a praise. Okay, and there's, you see the difference? Thank you is you saved me. Okay, Hallel is more of praise. Right? Shira is, we just had a terrible situation, which thank God worked out. So thank you very much. Hallel is, you're awesome, God, you're amazing. Okay, and they can come at different times depending on what the trigger is. Okay, yeah. So I'm using them interchangeably, but they're not exactly the same. Okay, so what do we have left? We have this section called Nirtza. What does Nirtza mean? Anybody? What does Nirtza mean? I don't know. How does this Haggadah translate it? We did this a couple weeks ago, and I brought a bunch of different Haggadahs. Nirtza says, the Publix one says Nirtza equals Nirtza. Thank you, Publix. Okay. This one says acceptance of the divine service. Anybody know what that means? I don't know what it means either. Thank you, Maxwell House. Okay. Listen, what nirtza, what's the root? It comes from the word resh tzadi. Resh tzadi is something which is wanted, desired. It could also come from the word which means run. Get the heck away from the Seder. Get out of here. Okay. Whatever the word means, and that's just the beauty of Hebrew, that you can take a word and it sometimes has multiple meanings. What Nirtza is, I'm not going to say that the Maxwell House Haggadah is actually not so far off in terms of where we're trying to go with this. Okay, now, what is Nirtza? So Nirtza has, essentially, I would say, three components. It has the very first part, then it has, which is Chasal Seder Pesach, that first paragraph, which concludes with Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. Then it has poems, which is one is called V'chein Vayhi B'Chatzi HaLaila, and the other one is V'chein V'amartem zevach pesach. And those, one of them is said on the first night, and the other one is said on the second night. So that we can call that one basically one, because it really, it's in the same slot. If you say the v'chein v'yibachatzi alayla on the first night, then you don't say it on the second night. And then v'amartem zevach pesach, you don't say it on the first night, you say it on the second night. Okay, then you have ki lo no'eh, ki lo ya'eh. And then you have the final two passages, which are perhaps most well known because they are the forms of they have been handed down from generation to generation in the form of songs. Okay, who knows one? I know one. One is Hashem. One is Hashem. One is Hashem. And Chad Gadya, right? One kid. One kid. One goat. One goat. However you want to translate the word Gadya, the kid is not referring to a child. It's referring to a goat. Okay, you want to make that clear. And that's how it ends. So I'm going to focus more on those two with after just a brief comment about Chasal Seder Pesach. Yeah, you have this Chasal Seder Pesach through the Shana Haba Yerushalayim, through next year in Jerusalem. Then you have three poems. Okay, three poems, and then those two mystical songs. Okay, but the first two poems are not interchangeable, but one's done on the first night, one's on the second night. So I mean, it's three poems in the text of the Agada, but in terms of usage, each night there are only two. Okay, because you'll do the one for the first night on the first night, and not the one for the second night, and on the second night you'll do the one for the second night, and not the one for the first night, and then kilo na'e kilo yoyah. Okay, so let's talk about the first one. The first one is Chasal Seder Pesach. Now this really is the conclusion. There are some people who, for Nirtza, they just do this and say Lashana Baba Yerushalayim. Why? Because Lashana Baba Yerushalayim is another nice way to end. Right? Ever go to Hakafos? That's usually the way Hakafos on Simchas Torah end. Okay, where else do we do Lashana Baba Yerushalayim? At the end of Yom Kippur, right? Lashana Baba Yerushalayim. Right? Even after the blowing of the, you'd think the blowing of the shofar should be the end on Yom Kippur. No, we do Lashana Baba Yerushalayim. Right? Because that's where we always want to be pining for that. Okay, even in Yerushalayim, they say Lashana Baba Yerushalayim. Okay, next year in Jerusalem. So Chasal Seder Pesach Kil Chasal. What was our goal on this evening? And that's really what we're, maybe that's why that's the translation, the acceptance of the divine service. What are we saying? The order of Pesach is now concluded in accordance with its halacha, in accordance with all of its laws and statutes, as we have carried out the Pesach observance of this Seder, so may we merit to perform it again. Pure One, who dwells on high, raise up the countless congregation of Israel in the near future, lead the shoots you have planted to Tzion, redeemed joyously next year in Jerusalem. Okay, so what is that essentially? It's a small prayer. We're saying, look, we try to do it right. We hope we did it right. We hope you appreciate what we've tried to achieve and tried to accomplish. Please accept it. And please God, Lashana Haba, next year in Jerusalem with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, that's the way it should be. Okay, and that's really a very good end point. And there are some who end really there. Some who take one step further. I understand that the minhag amongst true Chabad Hasidim, for example, is to not say the last two passages of Who Knows One and the Chad Gadya, but that they might say this next section of Amartem Zevach Pesach and Uvechem Ayi Bechatzi Alayla and Kilo Noe Kilo Yah. Okay, and so that's one conclusion. And some people who want to do Nirtza on a minimal basis, that's what they're going to do. Okay. Nobody's judging anybody. Okay? You should just at least do a little bit of Nirtza. And if you want to conclude with Lashana Baba Yerushalayim, then God bless. Okay? But then we take it to the next step. And the next step is those three poems that I mentioned. Again, one on the first night, one on the second night, and then the third one, which is done both nights. And depending on, some people like to sing these things together. Why do you sing it together? Because everybody's platzing. Remember, we just had a fourth cup of wine, ready to pass out. And those who want to get through this need the camaraderie of other people doing it along, in order to achieve it. But what are we talking about? We're just furthering the same idea. Ayi b'chatzi alayla, that it was at midnight. What was at midnight? Midnight was, I mean, think about what midnight's supposed to be. When we think about midnight, midnight is the darkest time of night. Now, I don't know if, technically speaking, that's actually correct. I'm not going to get into the astronomy of it and how the sky works. I don't know. But when we think about midnight, right? Anybody here ever see the show Cats? Mm-hmm. Midnight, right? What's midnight? Presumably, it's the darkest time of night, okay? And forget about, the actual, I don't know the reality. But when we think about what's the darkest time of night, when did the plague of the firstborn take place? that took place around midnight. The Torah says, Vayhi, is it Bachatzi? Kachatzi? I don't remember what it is. Bachatzi Alayla. Okay? But God told Paro, God told Moshe to tell Paro that around Chatzos Alayla, around midnight, this is going to take place. And why that is the case, so that Paro wouldn't say, oh, it didn't happen exactly. Okay, all right. So we're not going to open up that door. But midnight is when this took place. So for Egypt, it was a pretty dark and awful night. But what about for the Bnei Yisrael, for the Israelites who were in Egypt on that evening? What do we say? That there was a cry in all of Egypt, and not even a dog barked. Because why? Because God didn't let the dogs bark, and it was and it became a merit to the dogs. Okay, different conversation. But the point is that for the Israelites, they're in Egypt and they're hearing death all around. Death all around. Rashi even makes a comment, some of the other commentaries make a comment, that if there was an Egyptian in the house of a Jew and he was a firstborn, even though there was blood on the doorpost, God could have still gotten that guy. If there was a Jew in the house of an Egyptian and there's no blood on the door, the Jew is in a house where there is death, God would have spared the Jew if he's a firstborn, because somehow the destroying force was able to recognize, I mean, somehow coming from God, but could recognize who's a firstborn and therefore who's going to die. So when you look at this concept of Chatzi HaLaila, smack in the middle of the night, for Israel, there's on the one hand a little bit of an impending fear. What's going to happen? Do we really know? Is this blood thing going to work? Am I doing everything right? Am I in God's team? Is God on my side? You hear cries coming from everywhere and you're thinking, oh my goodness, what is going on? And then you realize it might be midnight and the darkest time for them, but midnight and this dark time is actually the very, I don't want to say the beginning because it's basically the end, but it's the trajectory of, I'm really on my, okay, it's the darkest time, but from here, it's only uphill, because in a little bit, Paro is going to be coming to Moshe and saying, it's time to leave. And Moshe knew this. Moshe told them, this is the last night we're here, we're leaving in the morning, even though Paro hadn't said, you can go. So when we say, Vayhi Bachatzi HaLaila, what we're doing is we're saying, where are we now? Right? Most people, by the time they get to Nirtza, what are we up to? It's basically midnight, because you want to try to finish your afikoman before midnight. That's a halacha. You want to eat the afikoman before midnight. And midnight doesn't mean 12. Midnight means whatever the halachic midnight is, which I don't know exactly when it is. But basically what you do is you take from sunset to sunrise and divide it in half. Okay? So let me just see. On this chart here, sunset is around this week is 7:55, and sunrise is 6:41. So what does that mean? Anybody? Somewhere in the 1 o'clock range. It's somewhere in the 1 o'clock range, right? It's not 12. Definitely not 12. So 4 hours until midnight, basically, and then 6 hours. So it's going to be 5 hours after 7:55. So 8 o'clock. So somewhere in the 1 o'clock range. Okay, 1 o'clock. It's somewhere in the 1 o'clock range. So did I do that right? I did that wrong. It's 11 hours. So it's going to be 5 minutes. So it's somewhere between 12:30 and 1 o'clock. That's when it's going to be. That's when midnight is. So, but that's around when we get to that point. So what are we saying? We're saying, this is it. This is it. I mean, we're going to be going to sleep, and that's fine. We're not being instructed to stay up all night because we're leaving and going to Egypt. We got to go in the morning to go to shul. That's a different instruction. But this is the moment. So if we're reenacting and if we're reliving the experience that the Bnei Yisrael had in Egypt, let's talk about it. Let's acknowledge that this is actually the time. This is the moment. That's what Vayhi Bachatzi HaLaila. And by Martim Zevach Pesach, it's the same idea. Not in terms of the time on a watch, but by Martim Zevach Pesach is that what were the people eating at midnight? They're eating their meat. They're eating their Zevach Pesach. And so that's the acknowledgement on both nights. And the last paragraph in those poems is Kilo Noeh, Kilo Yoeh, and Lo, of course, is spelled with Lamed Vav. Lamed Vav meaning to him is this grandeur and this glory, etc. And what are we talking about? We're talking about how amazing God is. We're talking about how amazing God is. And that's an important introduction to what's going to follow, simply because that's the theme of the evening. Once we've acknowledged that this is now the midnight time, and the midnight time is really the final blow to Egypt, and therefore it's the step that's, you know, where we're going up to where we're leaving in the morning. Okay? So where does that all come from? Where does the acknowledgement come to? On that evening, do people look at Moshe Rabbeinu and say, Moshe, you're amazing. Look what you've achieved for us. Okay, I think that anybody who was with Moshe knew that Moshe was in a house like everybody else, because Moshe said we're not allowed to go out of the house. So how is whatever is taking place taking place? How is it happening? There's only one way it's happening. It's God. And so even on that evening, as much as people saw Moshe as the one who would confront Paro, comes this last night that they're in Egypt, and when they realize and perceive what's taking place, they realize it's all God, and it's only been God. Moshe has been a tool. Moshe has been God's instrument for people to see and to recognize, but Moshe never claims that this is my doing. Moshe says, God's talking to me, and I'm just the channel through which God's word is being delivered and through which God's will is being delivered as well. And that is really the theme and the reminder that Nirtza is supposed to be giving us. And that is why Echad Miodea and Chad Gadya are significant. Because when we get to the end of the Seder and we're tired and we want to go to bed, these two passages, which are relatively new, if you want to look at the totality of Haggadah and see what was added most recently, these two things probably were. Most of Nirtza probably is a later addition. These certainly come from Europe. They were not, you know, Israel based. They come from Europe. It came from a Kabbalists, okay, mystics, people who wrote these things. I'm not sure if the authorship is known. I think it's disputed, but it was written in a particular period, certainly in Europe. And so what are they? What are they? Are they just silly songs that we're singing? You know, if any of you have heard of Shulam Lemmer, Shulam Lemmer is this young Hasidic singer. And he actually has made a nice name for himself. He's an amazing voice. And how did he get discovered? By the people who hired him to produce an album, okay, and to sing some singles. You could find him on YouTube. He sings songs from Les Mis. In addition to other things, he's sung God Bless America at baseball games and the national anthem at baseball games. He's a chassid. I mean, you know, the shaved head, the payas, everything. Okay, but he's just an amazing voice. So you have to find Shulam Lemmer Chad Gadya. Go to YouTube. You'll find it. So he's done it more than once, but the original time that he did it was in what I get. I don't know if it was a mock seder that they were doing. I don't know what they were doing. But he, with a bunch of other chassidim, were sitting around a table, and he was the solo, and they're doing some harmony in the background, and his voice is amazing. Just fantastic, powerful. Shulam, not Shalom. Shulam. S-H-U-L-E-M Lemmer. Okay? Okay, so Chad Gadya. I'm not going to sing it because I forget it. Not only will I ruin it, okay, but he's just amazing. His vocal, what a blessing! What a blessing the guy has. So he does it for Chad Gadya, and you know, if you've ever heard it, you want to try to imitate it as much as you can because it's just such a. I think it's a Mudgets tune that he's singing with his group, and it's really fantastic. But when you look at these two passages, you say, well, you know, what do these things have to do with anything? They certainly have nothing to do with Pesach. Right? Who knows one? I know one is Hashem, two is the tablets, three is the fathers, four is the mothers, five are the books of the Torah, six are the books of the Mishnah, seven are the days of Shabbos, eight are the days to Bris, nine are the days to, the months of birth. That's actually very interesting. We're going to get back to that in a second. Ten are the luchos, not the luchos, the Ten Commandments, the dibros, the statements on the tablets. 11 are the stars in Yosef, presumably in Yosef's dreams. 12 are the tribes. 13 are the attributes of God. So you look at this, you say, it's all very nice, you know, cute, very interesting numbers. And we can play a numbers game. And I was thinking, what kinds of alternatives could we make if you look at the totality of halacha? Like some of these numbers, they come from the Torah, right? Two tablets, three fathers, four mothers. If you go in halacha, and this is not funny, what I'm about to say, and I'm not trying to be funny, but you could say that, you know, in halacha, you have to have at least two witnesses for something. You need to have at least three rabbis on a beis din, on a court, right? There are other. I mean, why these numbers versus others? There are other areas in Judaism where we can come up with numbers, but maybe it's just a nice way to remember something. So that would really be a good point if all of these numbers were particularly Jewish. So we could say certainly about a lot of them, right? That you could show that Yeah, Judaism has numbers for some things, you could say, that's very nice. But there are a few which stand out which are not particularly, you know, Jewish, per se. And one of them is the one that I mentioned before. 9 Yarchei Leda, the months of gestation. I'm pretty sure we don't have a monopoly on that one. I'm pretty sure. 11 stars. So, you know, maybe 11 stars invokes an image from something which is in a story in the Torah, but what do the 11 stars represent? It's Yosef's dream, right? Remember Yosef's dream? That his 11 brothers are going to be bowing down to him. I don't know, it doesn't sound so Jewish. It's like, hey, look at me, I'm Yosef, and you're going to bow down to me. And very nice, but we couldn't find a better 11. I mean, not that I could think of another 11, but we couldn't come up with a better 11. I don't know. You know, Mel Brooks has that joke in History of the World Part 1 where he has, here are your 15 commandments. And then he drops one of the tablets and he goes, 10 commandments. So, you know, maybe. So so I think that it's important. And I heard this idea from Rabbi Tzvi Ram. Rabbi Tzvi Ram is a rabbi on the Lower East Side. And he works at YU as well, I believe. And he made a point regarding those two numbers. And I think he quoted somebody else. But he said that the Yarchei Leda, the months of gestation, is not talking about for birth, because that's not a particularly Jewish thing. I mean, Jews like to do that too. But but what he said is that it might be a reference to the concept of Mashiach. Okay, in other words, we have such a notion in Judaism that there's going to be a Mashiach, son of Yosef, and he's going to do whatever he's going to do. He's going to pave the way for Mashiach ben David, for the Davidic Messiah. And that time period between Mashiach A and Mashiach B is going to be a 9-month period of tremendous difficulty. Ooh, that's fascinating. So now we're dealing with something else that is actually very, very Jewish. What about the 11 stars? The 11 stars refer to the fact that there is a Jewish king, and who does he rule over? Jews. That's what Yosef was saying. Yosef isn't saying, I'm going to be a ruler over Egypt. Yosef doesn't care about Egypt. I'm going to rule over the Jewish people. But if I am a Jew and I rule over the Jewish people, then what kind of king should I really be? A compassionate king, a caring king. And that's the image of 11. But most importantly, I think it's important to understand what number, the first and the last. What's the first one? Who knows one? God. What's the last one? Who knows 13? 13 are? The midot of God. What midot of God? What character traits of God? The character traits of mercy, compassion. What's the Exodus all about? Mercy, compassion. You can say, oh, God put us there in the first place. Okay, do you know why? Do you know why? Do we understand why? That's an important question. I could talk about it for a long time, but I want to stay focused. But that's a question to ask. But in the end, God has attributes of mercy. That we learn at the time of the post-Golden Calf era. But again, what does Echad Yodea begin with and end with? It begins and ends with God, and that's our focus of the evening. And finally, that gets us to Chag Gadya. Chag Gadya. Okay, again, it's mystical. It's perhaps Kabbalistic in intent and where it comes from. And it's a strange tale, right? A goat and then a cat eats the goat and a dog eats the cat. Yes.
I heard there's historical information, like the fire is Persia or Assyria.
Right. Correct. There are many interpretations. Okay. I suppose that if I prepared that kind of a class about Chag Gadya alone, I could give you 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I mean, there are a lot of ways to interpret it for sure. For sure. I heard one funny way. Okay, I heard that there was a story. One of the great rabbis, when he was a kid, got into a fight with one of his siblings. And his father was going to give him a patch. And he said to him, before you patch me, I have a question on the Haggadah. So, okay, what's your question? So he says, you know, Chag Gadya, if you look at it, so the goat is very innocent. The cat eats the goat. So that makes the cat bad. Okay, so that when the dog bites the cat, that means the dog is good, right? Punishing the cat. So if you play this game back and forth, what does it do? It makes it that the angel of death is when it kills the shoichet, the angel of death is good, just if you do the math. Okay? And what does that mean about God who kills the angel of death? That he's bad. So, Daddy, how could God be bad? And the father says, that's actually a very good question. Do you have an answer? He says, yeah, I have an answer. When the goat and the cat are fighting, the dog shouldn't get involved. So, of course, the kid got patched twice. Okay. Anyway, so I mean, that's a cute story. But in the end, the bottom line is that a way to think about Chag Gadya? You know, you could look at it, but then you really have a difficult question. Is God bad? Is that a view that we want to have? And the answer, I like to think, is no. And therefore, what is the end? What's the end? You ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that who's the last to come into this whole picture and say, you know what, enough's enough. I'm going to end this game, and I'm going to take care of the Malach HaMavos. And what does that mean? What are we talking about? What is it? When is God going to take care of the Malach HaMavos, if you know what I mean? At the end, at the ultimate end. And what's the ultimate end? It's what we've been talking about. It starts with Shvach HaMaschel HaGayim. It starts with the concept of Geula. It talks about the concept of redemption. And in the end, what are we saying? Who's in charge? Who's God? That's the last message that the Haggadah is giving us. That in the end, V'as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So yes, Persia, you know, Greek. You can talk about the different nations over the course of time, and that's certainly an interpretation, and there are many interpretations. But in the end of the day, who's going to be present while everyone else is gone? The answer is Ribbono Shel Olam. The answer is God. And I think that's a good reason for why the Haggadah ends in this fashion, to remind us what this evening is all about. And it's a recommitment to God that we can all have. I don't think it's by chance that the most widely observed ritual in amongst all streams of Judaism is a family ritual, which begins with God and ends with God and focuses on our history. And I know a lot of people introduce a lot of politics today, all the new Haggadahs, like, you know, no, it means that you have to be a liberal. No, it means you have to be a conservative. No, it means you have to be a capitalist. No, it means you have to be a socialist. No, it means you have to be, you know what all that stuff is? Shtuyot. It's all nonsense. What you have to do is you have to look at what this book is telling you and don't start figgling and finagling. It's right here. It's right in front of our face. It's about redemption. It's about God. And it's about the Jewish people still being here. And hopefully that's a reminder that we can take when we go through our Haggadah with our guests, with our family, whatever we are privileged to have around our table, and to remember to keep the proper focus and to remember that this is what the evening of the Seder is all about. It's a night of reconnecting to God and appreciating the role that He plays in our lives. He redeemed us once, and please God, He'll redeem us once again in the future. Thank you.